to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer, and they will do everything John Deere. If you need a tractor, an attachment, a mower, you name it, they've got it up there. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or you could give them a call, 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
But, yeah, they do parts, service, sales, the whole shot. So, go up and see
them. Visual aids. We have an in-house guest. We have two in-house guests. We have Robert, who makes the free enterprise moments go away from our show, so you can hear the program with less interruption. And we have Joe with us today, who works on the marijuana issue all the time, whose background is in law enforcement, which is kind of how we're going to start off. We're going to kick off today with the law enforcement side of it on a local level. We don't do a lot of local programming, just because we have a lot of people who listen outside our area and outside our country, too, for that matter. We're talking about marijuana today, again. I know you're like, she's obsessed. But I think we'll keep talking about it until the information starts to repeat, which I'm starting to figure out may not ever happen. It just seems like there's more and more and more. Our guest today is going to be Ann Hassel, and she was a really big marijuana advocate. And I'll do her bio in just a second. But at the one of the things that we all have to be, that we all should be a lot smarter about is who is contributing to the candidates that are running for office? Who's doing that? And where's their money coming from? And I remember back in 2018 when a guy named John Green, who was a deputy or recently retired deputy or whatever, but he had been a deputy on the sheriff's department here in Shasta County. And I remember the former sheriff, Tom Basenko, telling me that he took money from the pot industry. And I thought, well,
when he was running for
sheriff against Tom back in 2018. Okay. And I thought, okay, well, that makes no sense to me at all. I guess I don't understand how you would be a sheriff's deputy and then run for the job of sheriff and then be funded by the marijuana industry, because I just can't think of a bigger scourge on our cities and our counties and our states with the crime, the just all of it, the human trafficking, the environmental degradation. Just, there isn't anything that this stuff doesn't mess up. Our kids driving, look at the driving, accidents, fatalities, the overdoses, all of it. So anyway, he decided, this John Green, decided to run again against our currently appointed sheriff who's filling a term. His name is Mike Johnson. So John Green's running again, and I thought, hey, wait a minute. I think that's the guy that took the money from the pot industry. So I got a hold of the old sheriff, former sheriff, and I said, so do you remember who that was? And he said, no, but it's in his campaign filings. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's not hard. That's a Form 460 for those of you who don't follow that sort of thing. So did a little homework, went in there, and on May the 2nd of 2018, there was a $2,500 contribution, and all that's listed for the name of the contributor is TWTME. And everybody else is like, yeah, there's a, you know, Stephen Tuttle, Jackie Park Burris, Queens Incorporated. I mean, there's like all these different things. And I'm thinking $2,500 was a lot. That was one of his top donors. And TWTME, so I sent that again to the former sheriff. And I said, is that who it is? He goes, I don't remember. I just remember it was really hard to figure out. So did some digging and some digging and some digging and more digging. And it turns out TW is Tim Wright and TME is Tim and Mike Enterprises. Well, if you do a little search in the cannabis registration thing in the state of California, Tim and Mike Enterprises owns Queen of the Dragons Collective up in Shasta Lake City.
Oh, I've been there.
I know, I saw you on the game cam I put out front. I was going to bring that up later.
Okay,
Spoiler alert.
All right, I won't do it again.
Actually, I could just put a tracking app on your phone. That would just save me so much time. But So I found this and I started asking people if they knew about it. And no, it just so happens nobody does know about that. And I think if you're running for sheriff and you're, I don't know if they're, what the contributions look like now, but I just, you don't have to believe me. Please don't. Please go look it up. And I posted it for you because it was really hard to find, but I can back up what I found. So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us and you look on Mother's Day, May the 8th of 2022, and obviously this will only be important for another, you know, month or so until the election, but please go on there and look. I put 2022 election alert, and I listed for, I attached the Form 460, the contribution form, and I put links to the license for Tim and Mike Enterprises at the Queen of the Dragons collective there in Shasta Lake City. So, just that seems to be a well-kept secret in a way. And people will say, well, so what? It's a business. It's a legal business. Okay, well, that's terrific. But I don't know how many of you think that it's a good idea to have your sheriff taking money from your from your local collectives when we have a huge marijuana problem with cartels and everything else in our community. That seems like that would muddy the waters. He was a sheriff's deputy in Shasta Lake at the time, too. So it wasn't like he didn't know what Queen of the Dragons was. He was a contract deputy in that city prior to taking that donation. So, yeah. So his big, I don't know, maybe you consider that conservative credentials, but he's running as an anti-establishment candidate. And I'm thinking, how are you an anti-establishment candidate if you're taking dope money?
Well, that's anti-establishment.
Is that it?
Yeah.
It's the old kind of anti-establishment, the 1960s anti-establishment?
That's right.
Yeah. You can say it. Say it out loud.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Aaron.
And I don't know where the weird chimes are coming from.
And we just got back from touring Siskiyou together, and I know that you were there,
yeah.
And we got to talk to everybody up in Doris. And so this is what I would say. I would say that we as deputy sheriffs have to act on what is legal, moral, and ethical. And while John might try to say it's legal, you and I both know, and statistics prove that about 80% of the collectives are now self-admitting that they take black market marijuana in the back door. They have to do it to stay in business because of the black market. Simply is the legal market. Simply is the black market now.
Yeah.
So in the case of John, obviously he has a ethical and moral dilemma. He knows better. He knows he should never have done it. He went all in for it. He spoke at a Patriots meeting. He tried to get the public behind it. He tried to get me behind it. I had a personal conversation with him. Said everything he was doing was wrong. When I do my job as a police officer, everything that the way that I treat the public, am I doing, is it legal? And what I'm doing and how I'm treating the public, is it ethical? And am what I am doing and how I treat the public, is it moral? And we as peace officers are definitely held to a higher standard. And John failed completely on those. And he knows it. He's self-admitted. He's admitted that he took the money. He's tried to justify it, saying it's legal. But he knows in his heart of hearts that he's made a huge error. What I'm worried about now, and so I think what's important is that he came out with a policy, and he was going to push that policy, which would have flooded the entire county with marijuana. And all of our children, the 95% that are exposed, it's the easiest drug to obtain in our community. We have 15% of our young people are now part of the stoner crowd. We have a quarter of our females that are pregnant are now using it. I mean, the issues that go on with this are going on and on. What has me worried now is that he's still taking this special interest money. We know that Rivera Anselmo put in, you know, $500,000 into the current races. That's flowed down through Liberty Committee. And just so you know, full disclosure, I'm a friend with many of the people on the Liberty Committee. I love what they're doing. I appreciate many of their positions, but I'm also looking for our voters to have complete information about these people and where is their money coming from. When you look at other candidates, You look at their money. They're taking multiple donations from different people. But when you look at Mr. Green's candidacy, he's taking huge amounts of money. Basically, his entire campaign fund is coming from one look. And what is going to be expected from that? Is he going to be – whose ring does he have to kiss? And there is someone that he will have to kiss for all of that money, Aaron. And that's what bothers me, the corruption of money flowing into our politics.
Well, and when what we have seen in this area, in the Northern California area, and other places too. I mean, the video smokescreen that's on the page for today. I'll tell you what, if you don't have time to listen to the whole interview today, if this is an issue that you feel like, yeah, I'm pretty informed about this. I kind of know what's going on. I promise you, you don't. And please, my phone number's right on the website, so please call me if I'm wrong. But I think if you go on there and you watch this 45-minute video that our guest was in, it's called Smokescreen, and it's smokescreenmovie.org, and there's also a book, What the Marijuana Industry Doesn't Want You to Know. I think it will blow your mind. Okay,
yeah,
so you watched it this morning.
Yeah, I did. It was
someone's chimes are ringing.
It was mind-blowing. I had no idea this was the kind of stuff that was going on in the pot industry, and I had no idea of the refinement of THC that's happening and the potency levels and what it's doing to the kids and, well, everybody that participates in that. And the thing that struck me, I think, the most was the culture. They talk about the marijuana culture. And, I mean, step back and look at that culture. Is that really what you want your kids to be involved in? Watch the film.
Well, and it's, you know, there are stores everywhere. And so for your communities where the decisions are being made by people who might have smoked pot once in the 60s, this is not the same thing.
No, and they address that.
And they're totally normalizing it by putting stores in our town, thinking they're getting tax revenue and all that, which is just a big lie and a big promotion, actually a huge promotion.
And they're marketing it to the young crowd.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, packaging candy and gummies and the different flavored vapes. I mean, it's mind-blowing.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So please go and look at that. Again, it's May 8th, 2022 at wethepeopleradio.us. And send it to a friend because I promise you they don't know it either. We're going to take an early break, come back with our guest, Ann Hassel, and speak with her for the rest of the program. Just wanted to get that note out there about Sheriff. And if it's happening in Shasta County, it may be happening someplace else. So the hot news is go look at your candidates. Look at their campaign filings. Where's their money coming from? And if you see something weird like TWTME and you're like, what the heck is a TWTME? The likelihood is when you drill down, you'll find something untoward, because why wouldn't you just put Queen of the Dragons Collective? Because you just didn't want anybody to know.
Aaron, before you go, I just want your viewers to know, or your listeners to know, that you were involved in a documentary that we are doing locally here in Northern California called Cartelville, the Sequel. And that has been finalized as of last week. And I ask everybody to listen. We are going to have a premiere in Redding. And I'm really looking forward. We're about 10 weeks away post-production. And it's our local issues here in Shasta, Siskiyou, and Lassen counties.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to watch the first one, I have a tab on the website labeled pot, makes it really easy for you. And the Cartelville link is on there, and I'll put the smokescreen link on that page also. So it's super easy to find. All the shows we do about marijuana are on there. And our guest, Ann Hassel, she was a true marijuana believer, leaving her job as a physical therapist to enter the green rush as a bud tender in Massachusetts in a medical marijuana dispensary. Took me a while to figure out a bud tender was like a bartender. I was like, what's a butt tender? Is she out in the garden or whatever? I'm so dumb about this. I don't know my nomenclature. After a year and a half of selling and consuming toxic, unnatural, and harmfully high THC products, she experienced heavy metal poisoning, cannabis use disorder, and cannabis-induced psychosis. Nobody tells you that when you're getting started. Concerned about harm to others, and especially the youth, she joined the Preventionists. Anna's testified before national and state authorities and politicians. She's appeared in the film Smokescreen. She's in there quite a few times. And is included in Dr. Sabat's book, Smokescreen, What the Marijuana Industry Doesn't Want You to Know. We'll be back in about a minute and a half, and we'll be visiting with Ann Hassel and hearing her story. Because those of us who've never done it, we can talk all day long, but if you were involved in that and you've walked away, that's the story to hear.
Yeah.
So you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Now I have coffee. Maybe it'll make me stop sounding like Marge Simpson, but it's doubtful.
Well, there's anything in my headphones.
Marge Simpson's probably going to continue. Okay, so our guest, Ann Hassel, is with us by phone. All right, Ann, you have a big story, and I only just gave like a little tiny blurb. And we're sorry we had to hog up the first part, you know, to keep people from voting from a dope advocate, but...
Well, thank you, Aaron and Bill, for having me on your show.
Sure.
And I guess it is like a long story in a way because, again, I came from going into the industry. I was very much a marijuana supporter, and I had used marijuana. And actually, I had grown my own plants in Virginia back in the 1980s and was arrested and was facing 5 to 25 years in jail. I didn't feel that that was warranted. I actually did go to jail for a month. And that whole experience, it actually made me even more convinced that the government had it wrong about marijuana, that it was a natural plant. So I went on with my life, and I became a physical therapist. But in the back of my mind, you know, my heart was in the marijuana industry. It was something I considered my dream job. I wanted to be a part of it. So back in September of 2015, I actually was employed as a patient sales associate, otherwise known as a bud tender. And the bud tender is the person at the counter who weighs the flower, the marijuana flower, and sells the product. I, again, was very enthusiastic about it. I thought I had a big background of working with patients who had a lot of health problems. And, again, this was my dream job. But when I did sign up, I did have, in fact, to sign a non-disclosure agreement that had it threatened me with a $100,000 fine and or criminal prosecution. So that didn't feel right. That was a week before I was starting work. I thought, well, why is this necessary? I don't know. And I have to say that my marijuana corporation, which was the third in the state, it was started by individuals from Colorado. And I had thought, Colorado did it right. They've been at this longer. This is a medicine. And I have to say that I was completely duped. And unfortunately, you know, had to learn the hard way about this. And what I first learned was I was waiting for the supposed really medical part of the plant, the cannabinoid cannabidiol, the CBD. But our dispensary only opened with the high-potency THC. The flower was a 34% sativa THC. And it just seemed really odd to me because, again, I was someone, a physical therapist, who had read and researched. It seemed like the CBD had the more therapeutic component. But, again, my corporation was focused on the high potency. We were actually told in a meeting that their aim was to have the high-potency THC concentrate. And I actually, Aaron and Bill, I didn't know what high-potency THC concentrates were. I'm someone who, again, had consumed marijuana in the 80s, was maybe 2%, maybe in the 90s is getting up to 5%. I had no idea. I had thought marijuana, again, was going to be a flower, which I imagine a lot of people in this nation think. But things just seem rather odd at the dispensary, especially when I noticed there was mold on the buds in the bins. And I was told to go ahead and pick off the moldy part and sell the rest. They also sent me to the cultivation center in 2016, and I was excited. I couldn't wait to go there and legally trim the marijuana. But it was covered in mold, and that didn't sit right with me. And I said to the supervisor, what will I do about this mold? And she said, well, trim around it. But I know that something like mold is invasive. It's going to be found on the entire plant. And the proper thing would have been to dispose of it. So I have to say I was consuming more and more high-potency flower, and I was having bad adverse effects. I was having respiratory problems and getting headaches. And I just thought, I mean, that's what's so crazy about this story, is that I could see the mold in the bins, and I could see it on the plant. But the thing is, I was suspicious of my marijuana corporation, but I trusted the state to regulate it. But when they came out with the concentrates, the CEO, Kevin Fisher from Colorado, he said, okay, we're going to have these high-potency THC concentrates. They're a more medicinal way to medicate. And then I thought, well, when you make the concentrate, you're stripping the marijuana, the cannabinoids, from the vegetative material. So I'm someone who, I knew there was mold on the plant, and I thought I would just go with the concentrate. And the first time I did a dab hit of that 98% THC shatter, it was an incredibly powerful high. And I'm someone who had actually tried cocaine back in the 80s, but this high-potency THC, when I did that dab hit, it just flooded my brain. I immediately started consuming more and more marijuana products, and I was having even more adverse effects. I was actually having more physical problems, and I noticed actually the whole dispensary atmosphere changed. The patients were becoming aggressive, and whereas when we first opened, it seemed like a lighthearted, fun place to be. People were thankful we're there. But it got really some dark energy going on, and I know that the security guard told me he felt like he was working in a crack house. So I thought that was a true statement, because people were becoming or having aggression and intermittent explosive disorders. But I have to say, Aaron and Bill, I could see what was happening to other people, but I couldn't see what was happening to me. I was totally swept up in it. I worked for a corporation that promoted usage of the products. We were given the beta products for a dollar. We were told to try them as soon as possible so we could report back on the effects. And I was going along and having more and more physical problems. Actually, neurological problems were happening to me. I didn't know what was going on. I was also, again, having a severe cannabis use disorder. But I also would be dabbing after work, and I would be passing out at my friend's house, and they were very concerned about me. I would pass out for some time. I'd come to. I started to have these escalating violent thoughts. I thought about, first of all, destroying property. Then I thought about harming people, beating them with a baseball bat, and then stabbing them, and then shooting them. And I have to say, this is the darkest place I've ever been in my life. And I was thinking of a way to end my life. But fortunately, I was at the dispensary working, and I just noticed that there was a coworker of mine who I really respected, and she was talking to the customers about all the problems they were having with their physical problems. And then that woke me up. I thought, there's something wrong here. That's the first time I really could see that there was something really wrong. And from then, I went and got a marijuana bud tested. Whereas it did pass the test, I had talked to the lab, and what they told me had me believe that there were products out there that shouldn't be out there. There were ways of faking the test. And I actually quit my job, and then I actually met up with a cultivator from my corporation and also the harvest manager. And they, for over a year, had been contacting the Department of Public Health about the mold, and they weren't getting any response at all. So at first they were very excited to meet with me, thinking, well, now we have the patient. Now we have actually the product being moldy. Now this is what's going to come out. But nothing was ever done. And what I have to say is that the heavy metal poisoning was so terrible, but so was the cannabis-induced psychosis. And for a long time, I have to say, Aaron, I didn't think that marijuana itself was harmful. I thought it was the heavy metal poisoning that I, again, had, I had myself tested for it once I realized about the mold and the bud stalks being dunked in caustic hydrogen peroxide. I read a Smithsonian article that modern marijuana is often laced with heavy metals and fungus. And I was really scared because I really feared heavy metals most of all because they can stay in your body, destroy your organs, and cause cancer.
Now, was this from the pesticides or where was the heavy metals coming into play?
Well, what happens is, first of all, my state, like Colorado, only tests for four: mercury, arsenic, lead, and cadmium. But when you have what I call frankenweed, which is this factory farming, you have pesticides, fungicides, low-end nutrients, and fertilizers, and plant growth regulators, because the corporations want to maximize their profits. And when you have large indoor grows or greenhouse grows, you have susceptibility to mold. It's very hard to control the humidity. And what they do is they, again, are spraying with pesticides that have, in fact, heavy metals in them. And it's the wild, wild west. It's been said by other people, also in Kevin Sabet's book, about Colorado, even someone who was actually working for the Colorado Marijuana Enforcement Division. And I don't think the public knows this, and I am just appalled that months and months or years have gone by, actually, because this was back in 2017 when I finally quit the job. I had found articles that are just talking, again, about the contamination. And it's always after they sell the product that they do a recall. Whoops, we had too much mold or heavy metal. Oh, okay, return this. But by then, most of the patients had probably smoked it.
Now, when you worked at the collective,
So I worked for a marijuana corporation.
Well, did you ever see any testing going on?
Well, this is the problem I've discovered with the testing. You have a large batch of marijuana. You have the marijuana corporation select whatever they want to select from it and drive it to the lab themselves. Now, you're supposed to have...
What could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the problem. And I didn't know all this. I really thought going into this is a medicine. That is what they're saying to the public. This is a medicine. And I'm someone who was a marijuana aficionado. I thought, of course, they're going to grow it the best way. People I know grow it the best way they can. But not when you have these really greedy, deceptive corporations that just care about the money. That's the only thing on their mind.
Well, and, the money. Then the cartels who never intended to grow any of this legitimately or you know, using good quality product. I mean, these guys, they're just...
Strictly for the money.
It's all money. All money. Mm-hmm. They don't care what happens to the people who are out there physically working on it. They don't care what happens to the land. They don't care what happens to the people who live near that. And they're just leaving just massive amounts of devastation. I was interested in this book. There's a quote from you that at a staff meeting, people lounged around on cool leather couches talking about their experience with various pot products, and you recalled one person saying that he went into seizures.
Yes.
Another guy said his tongue went numb.
Yes.
Another one said, I got really bad TMJ pain. His staff meetings sound amazing.
God, yeah, that
well,
sounds
you know,
like something
really
I want.
It was terrible, like sitting there and then having the young man who went into seizures. He was 26. He was very much used to the THC. But we, what really bothered me is one day, again, Kevin Fisher from Colorado sat on the cool leather sofa and said, we're going to be using out-of-state synthetically derived hemp CBD crystalline instead of using the plant. And that didn't sit right with a lot of people working there with me, because why on earth are we creating a synthetic product if we are a marijuana, have a cultivation center? And I read that also in Utah that did cause seizures because these synthetic cannabinoids are dangerous. And that's why people think, they actually think that the marijuana dispensaries are safer. And I believe that is not true. What's even worse is that, again, people are saying, oh, it's safe. Oh, it's so safe. And that's the farthest thing from the reality.
Well, it's always said that you know, the products you buy, you know, don't buy it from a grower. Buy it from a collective because all their stuff is tested and it's organic and there's no chemicals or pesticides used on it. When, in fact, a very high percentage of the products that are tested, I think it was the state of California that regulates
it. Is it 85% or something?
Yeah,
had
contamination.
Chemicals and contamination.
Yeah. But what was done about
it? It's a huge number.
Nothing. They just
California,
went back to doing it.
At one point, 30% of the products on the shelves had banned pesticides in them. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just appalling. And it's appalling because, again, people are spending a lot of money. Like a gram in Massachusetts is, well, for the medical, it's $15. So it's expensive. And people think, oh, because it's expensive. Oh, because the store looks cool. Then this is a clean product. But, in fact, it is just a true diabolical deception upon the public.
Well, and there's, you know, the thing that we learned with Dr. Stuart Rees, and for people who missed that program or those two programs, actually, I hope you go back and you listen. I can hear him ringing in my ears. You know, he was saying it all causes cancer, and I was like, well, what about CBD? He's like, yeah, it causes cancer. I go, well, what about if they grew it themselves and it didn't have all these chemicals on it? And then he, like, talked really slow because I was kind of, I think he decided I might be a moron. He's like, if it comes from the cannabis plant, it causes cancer. And I was like, oh, okay, so all my other questions are pretty much answered right there. But the CBD and the hemp and all that, that, I think, is a newsflash for a lot of people. I asked a room full of folks the other night, how many people think that hemp is, you know, basically kind of harmless and safe? I don't know, three-quarters of the room? They don't have any contact with it. They don't know anything about it. But it's like, well, that seems kind of, that's not, you know, marijuana.
There's
like
no THC in it.
Yeah, nobody's doing that. And CBD, well, that's everywhere. They're using it for joint pain. Now, were you into the whole CBD thing back then? Or how long ago was this?
Well, I have to say, Aaron, at one point, this is back in 2015 when I started working, but my dream was like have cannabis-infused lotions because I was a physical therapist, and I thought, that's it. I'm going to make some quality cannabis-infused lotions. But since I have, again, I've taken some classes on the harms of marijuana, one by Dr. Paula Gordon, and I have to say I didn't believe any of the harms of what is the reality. Because once you're using marijuana, you like marijuana, and you discount anyone saying anything bad about it.
Yeah, it kind of does blow the paradigm, doesn't it? When we come back, I want you to tell people, because unfortunately, when it comes time for voting, when it comes time for decisions made at the city and county level, so many people, you're plugged in active voters don't really know anything about this. I mean, our knowledge is really limited. So they don't know what dabbing means. They don't know what cannabis-induced psychosis means. Maybe you could kind of unravel a few of those things. Because people tell them all the time that it's not addictive. And you've had a totally different experience, and you're qualified to speak to it. So we're going to pick your brain on that when we come back. Our guest is Ann Hassel. She hails to us from Massachusetts. And she was all in on marijuana, and now she's all in on those of us who are not all in on marijuana. We're happy for her help and for her information. You can find the program May the 8th, 2022 at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
There we were all in one place, a generation lost in space, with no time left to start again. So come on, Jack, be nimble, Jack, be quick. Jack Flash sat on a candlestick, 'cause fire is the devil's only friend. Oh, and as I watched him on the stage, my hands were clenched in fists of rage. No angel born.
Yes, the magic of cannabis. That's not so magical. Okay, so Anne, when you say, what is it? The cannabis use disorder. That's the one I see that written and I read about that. But what does that mean exactly?
That actually uses marijuana addiction. I have to say, when we were sitting around on the cool leather couches at the start of the opening of the dispensary, we read that 9% of the problem can have a problem with addiction, but we all brushed it off and we didn't believe it. Because people say that marijuana is not addicting. They keep saying that, and they keep saying that it's healthier than alcohol. But marijuana, especially the high THC, it's very addicting.
So they start using, and that's another thing they say all the time. Oh, you can't be addicted to that. You know, people become alcoholics. But,
yeah, right.
But marijuana, they don't become addicted to that.
One of the things they talked about in the film was how marijuana is a gateway drug. And that's one of the things that they're so adamant about. You know, marijuana is not a gateway drug. And yet, I forget what the number was in the film, but it was a very high percentage of people that were addicted to opiates, heroin, all the rest of it started with marijuana. And can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's like any drug, or the brain has the pleasure centers, the dopamine, in the brain. And we all have a natural reward. Let's say you're sitting out in the sun, you're having a good day. Life is satisfying, or these things that give us pleasure. But when you use a drug, it then becomes what you now need to have as that same level of feeling good. And you're consuming more and more of it. I felt like my brain was hijacked from high THC. And I'm someone where I started using marijuana back in the 80s. I did go on to psychedelics because that actually, you're right, Bill. You're at a party, people say, hey, you might as well try this. And when you're under marijuana's influence, you think, well, why not? I'll just feel better. I did try various psychedelics, like I said, cocaine and all these other drugs. I did not become addicted to them at all. I did not become addicted. In fact, I quit them when I realized they were harmful. But with marijuana, I didn't see it as being harmful. I thought it's also insidious because you don't know it's harming you. You think it's, again, the society is saying it's a medicine. It's not harmful. It can be, your feel good. It's everywhere. You go to the CVS or the department store and you just see more and more magazines about the benefits of marijuana. I think this is a large snake oil hoax happening right now. And unfortunately, people are going to have to be harmed before they wake up to it.
Yeah, I think the whole medicine angle was really a brilliant move to get people to accept marijuana. And if it's a medicine, how can it be bad for you? And they still...
And they sell it in stores,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but they
That's
still
what kids
use
are seeing
that.
All the
when,
time.
When they're trying to get states and counties to allow the dispensaries and whatnot to open. A lot of them still haven't gone there, but that's the first thing they go for is it's a medicine. People need it. You know, cancer patients, children. And it pulls, you know, on all the heartstrings and, you know, it has all the, they're saying all the right things. It's a con job. It's not a medicine. It's a drug. And if it's a medicine, Why don't they market it through pharmaceutical companies? Oh, they're evil. They're the evil corporations. But they have drugs that do the same thing but better and more regulated than marijuana. But they won't tell you that because this is a medicine and it's so natural.
I'm curious, Anne, when you were working in that industry. I know you probably can't figure a percentage or whatever, but how many people were utilizing marijuana because they thought it was a medicine, and how many people were just, you know, shading it because they just wanted to smoke pot?
Well, that's a good question.
It's kind of hard to know, I realize.
I think in the beginning, I did notice in the beginning you had a lot of debilitated people, but you know what bothers me is there was a woman who came into the dispensary. She told people she had fibromyalgia, right? And she needed some medicine. The problem is that we had 20-year-olds working there, over 21, and they would push the high THC sativa. And there was a time when I went to hang out with her after work, and I saw her consume the high THC sativa, and she became psychotic. Well, it turned out she was bipolar. She didn't tell anyone in the dispensary she's bipolar.
They wouldn't have known what it was anyway. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Well, they're not. They're not. Do they lead the people who work there? Like, when you went to work there, was it like, okay, put on your lab coat, now you're a fake doctor? I mean,
no, they didn't want for us to give so-called medical advice, so they certainly gave us a chart of conditions. Like, one, except for glaucoma, use marijuana 24/7. That doesn't sound like good advice. And
no.
I heard that actually marijuana can make your glaucoma worse. So there's all this misinformation, and it's, again, a $1 billion industry that is pushing people. And I was just a little tiny cog in the whole thing. But I definitely saw, I have to say, more and more people were coming in and getting their card. Now, I have to say, even myself, I was wondering, how on earth am I going to get a medical marijuana card? I'm healthy as a horse. And I was healthy as a horse before I started working there. So then I did some research, and then I found out there are some cannabis docs that didn't require any type of documentation. So I went there, and I said I had, what did I say? I think I said I had back pain, and I was supposed to have some documentation that proves this, right, from a PCP. I didn't have any corresponding documentation. They gave me my card. When I went back a year later and they printed up my purchase history, which was like an inch and a half thick of paper, and the people were like, we've never seen anything like this before, the doctor said to me in the office, look, I don't feel comfortable that you don't have any diagnosis as to why you need this. You need to go to your primary care physician and get a pseudo-diagnosis for PTSD. And I thought that was very unprofessional, though I was happy he gave me the card again for another $200.
There, you hit it right on the head, because they hit you for, you know, $200. You're in and out of there in 10 minutes, and they go on to the next person. That was some easy money for doctors in the beginning to hand out these medical marijuana cards. And you're right. There was they knew nothing about you as a patient, but they had no problem taking your money and giving you a medical marijuana card and sending you on your way. That just, I mean, when you stand back and look at it, does that seem right?
Well, I don't think it seemed right that I also, again, had a laser printout. Like, they printed all my purchases for a year, and it was an inch and a half thick. And clearly I had a problem, right? I mean, if I'm buying all of that.
Yeah.
And they were just like, wow, we can't believe this. And I just wanted my card, and then I never did go to get that pseudo-diagnosis. I just thought, at that point, I actually stopped consuming marijuana. I quit the dispensary because I was so severely harmed by it, and I didn't even want the medical marijuana card.
Did how long were you there? How long from I went to work there, used tons of it, thought I was going to have to go kill people, and then decided to get out? Like, what's that time?
I was there a
lag?
Year and a half.
Oh my God, that's pretty fast.
Wow. That's a rapid descent.
Once the high-potency THC concentrates came out, which is, again, you were asking me about Well, what are they? Well, I thought that marijuana, before I went to work in the dispensary, was a plant. You talk about the cannabis plant, a natural plant. Well, no. What they do is, at least in my state of Massachusetts, and I believe California and Colorado, is they take the plant and they strip it of the, like the crystal, the part that's psychoactive or gets you high, or the other cannabinoids, and they strip it with butane and propane. Think about that. That's so unnatural in itself.
Yeah.
That
you're
going to use butane and propane, and then you cause it to, again, evaporate. So you're left with this condensed product that's strong. The problem is that you're increasing the heavy metals and, in fact, the mycotoxins. Because I don't think I sent it to you, Aaron. There was one article, blasting mold into green gold. You're up there in Washington State. What do you do with all the moldy marijuana? Oh, let's make the concentrate. Let's blast it. That's that butane hash oil production.
Okay.
Where, again, if I had consumed the flower in the dispensary, maybe it would have been 20 to 30% when I do an inhalation of the THC. But when you do the concentrate, it was 98%, and that was way stronger. And I'm someone who was used to marijuana. I had done marijuana for decades.
Yeah.
No psychological problems. I had been successful in life. And that's what makes me so scared, Aaron and Bill. What about these young people that are, the first thing, they're not smoking what I smoke, the 3 to 5%. They're smoking that 98%.
Yeah, they're doing some
damage.
They're
moving right into that.
And when you talk about the propane and butane, I know they mentioned in the film the amount of damage by house fires, explosions, people getting burned and killed, because, you know, they're doing this in a laboratory setting, of course. But they're blowing their houses up making this stuff, but that's all right. It was just a rental. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I have to say one thing. People like to say, like my friend is trying to stop it. In Vermont, they have a potency cap of the THC. It's 30% for flower, 60% for the concentrate, which is the only one in the nation. Well, the industry didn't want that to happen. Even though one recreational store has been open, they want to get rid of that. And their reasoning is, well, we have to have it because the black market, the concentrates will increase the black market. But as you know, out there in California, unlike alcohol, I feel like with alcohol prohibition, you did increase the criminal activity. But here we have marijuana legalization. We are actually increasing the crime. And it's just so terrible. People think that this is the answer. I don't think this is the answer. I think this is a big, big problem.
Well,
so you were, you were hassled by the whole legal thing when it was illegal, and I'm sure that drove you to supporting the industry.
Yes.
But now looking back on that, what's your hindsight on that?
Well, I know how hard it will be to convince people, Aaron. I was someone where I was in the criminal justice system. Granted, I didn't really get much drug treatment. It was different back in Virginia.
Sure.
They weren't really saying, well, you have an issue, let's send you to someone. I think I did very minimal that type of effort. I just finished my degree, and I immediately moved out of state. I moved out of state to pursue what I was really looking forward to, consuming marijuana again, because when I was on probation, I couldn't consume it. They were drug testing me every month, which, as you know, or maybe you don't know, that the marijuana goes right to your fatty tissues, and it stays in the urine for, it could be up to a month. When I finished my probation and went, and actually I rejoined the boyfriend who actually, I took the heat. The plants, half of the plants were his. We're talking 12 plants total. Half the plants were his. I took the heat. He fled the state and went to Massachusetts, and I later joined them. And I remember I couldn't wait to consume it, Aaron. I couldn't wait to consume marijuana. I did a bong hit of this really strong, because around the late 80s, they started to hybridize the plant. Because they started to lower the CBD, which actually counteracts the THC.
Oh.
So in other words, they're trying to make the plant as strong as possible. And I remember I did a hit of that back in 1990. And I remember it was too strong. I had to lie down. I didn't think I could handle it. I was worried because this isn't what I thought marijuana would do. And people are like, don't worry about it. You'll get used to it. And, you know, sadly, I did. And I understand people. They look at marijuana, those using it, oh, it's not harmful. It almost becomes the center of your life. It did for me. But then again, I was working in the industry. The people are around. Everyone was using marijuana. We talked about how it didn't harm anyone. We felt we were a part of this big movement that was taking this oppressed plant and oppressed people and giving them freedom. And
we're going to come back. We're going to talk about a lot more of that. Our guest is Ann Hassel. You are listening to We the People. We'll be back after the news at wethepeopleradio.us. Second hour of We the People Radio. All right, there was some goofing off. I admit it. There was a little bit of goofing off. So, Bill?
Hi.
I got Bill doing one thing. Okay, Bill, now you have to switch to the sponsorship one. You don't want me to do it, do you?
No,
226-9226, 3119 Twin View Boulevard. I'll do the whole commercial backwards.
That's okay.
I
really don't require that level of assistance. Thank you. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They've got everything you need when it comes to tractors, attachments, mowers. They got it all. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller, and that's in Shasta Lake. So give them a call, 226-9226, or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Yeah, Shasta Lake City, home of Queen of the Dragons Collective, who gave money to John Green, who was running for sheriff against Sheriff Johnson, Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson, good sheriff. John Green.
I find it kind of ironic that his name's Green.
I know. It has an E on the end, though.
Oh, okay.
So it's not exactly the color.
It's disguised.
Yeah. Kind of like that donation.
Yeah.
Yeah. TWTME. So if you have no idea what I'm talking about and you're a voter in Shasta County, please go to the webpage and look that up before you cast your ballot for the sheriff's race here in June.
They're just a business.
Just a business. Yep. Yeah. If you're good with your sheriff candidate taking money from a pot collective, then I guess you're
a pothead, fucker.
I guess you're probably not listening to our show, actually. Unless you just needed to build up some hate. Just build up the hate. Because we're going to just keep talking about this topic because it is, I don't know. I don't even know what to call it anymore.
The other candidates. Don't forget to look at the other candidates,
and,
please.
Yes, look at them all. And if you live in a different place, like you're not in Shasta County, which would be, you know, 99% of the people listening, do be a good researcher. You know, we're really easily led sometimes as voters. We listen to what people tell us and we go, oh, okay, that's what they believe. Ask around. And, you know, I'll give you a shortcut. The shortcut is go ask the other person's campaign what the other guy or gal isn't telling you. That's the shortcut. We found a Senate candidate who was lying about a piece of legislation because he thought our activist group was not smart enough to find it, which at that time was totally true. But I went to, I guess we would have never known. We were going to ask him about, you know, abortion and some stuff like that. And the other candidate said, hey, he authored a piece of legislation, AB 375, but it never passed. He's not going to realize you know about that. And I was like, well, hot tip. So, yeah, check out both campaigns and play them against each other as a voter. That is your fastest way to do it. And if you think one of them is good, volunteer to help. Then you'll really find out what's going on.
Yeah.
What am I doing with this?
It just shows that
Mr. Green is putting himself out as a moral and ethical candidate.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess you have to make decisions for yourself, but when it's that hard to find a $2,500 donation, who it came from, you got to wonder.
Moral and ethical candidate, dude.
Thanks for keeping us honest, Bill.
Yeah, okay. Come on.
Okay. So our guest today is Ann Hassell. And the really cool part about Ann's story is she was all in for the industry, realized what was going on, was harmed by it, and now is all out and helping people get educated. Because, honestly, we don't know this stuff. We really don't.
No.
It
hasn't really been, I mean, it's been out a long time, but this type of information hasn't been out.
No, it hasn't. And the industry,
all we're hearing is that
totally doesn't want us to know.
That's all you're hearing.
So I'm like, I've got all these little notes here. So, so your partner, 1 year from deputy sheriff to suicide. Oh, one of your trainees.
So that's Deputy Jeff Trevelyan, 30-year, honorably retired, had lots of injuries, retired, started using pharma medication, didn't like the effects, said he'd start on marijuana, began dabbing, and after a year, and I actually had written several 5150s on him, tried to get the department to deal with it. They did not, and after a year, he committed suicide in a most horrific manner. He was able to cut his own throat ear to ear under the influence of high-potency THC. When the autopsy was done, his body was saturated with it, and I lost him. And that's why I will battle this for the rest of my life.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't hear about that, do you?
Yeah. Kind of moment of silence on that one. That's what people have to look forward to from their natural product. Now here, Bud Tender's report, and this is from where are you finding this? Bud Tender's report that any product under 90% potency is unmarketable.
So I always read the industry publication, which is marijuanabiz.com. People can go on and look at the industry and see all the profit, and they put out little quips all the time, and that's what the Bud Tenders are reporting, that people do not want the lower potency THC. They need the highest potency possible to sell to people.
Hmm. And so here we have Dr. Finn reports patients coming to the ER using
2 to 5,000 milligrams.
I'm like, did you just get carried away with the zeros? 2 to 5,000 milligrams?
That's both Dr. Lev, who's Scripps San Diego, and Dr. Finn, who is an ER doc in Colorado. And both of them are part of ISIC, the ISIC community, which is on your website. Thank you for putting that up there. It's great research.
And how much are they consuming?
2 to 5,000 milligrams. So for those of us who are stupid and don't know what regular milligram, I mean, you know what? The normal milligrams, apparently 10 is normal.
And even that's going to stone you on your rear end, depending on the potency of
THC. So 5,000 is kind of higher.
Yeah, kind
of. Just sort of a little higher.
And that's why we have hyperemesis has come around, and you know, acute marijuana syndrome has come about. All these new actual medical terminology for marijuana intoxication.
Yeah, that wouldn't give you psychosis. I mean,
No.
Our own hospital reports 39% now test positive for high potency THC when they do drug tox screens on someone coming in for whatever that requires a drug tox screen. So that's happening in our local community.
Wow. So Ann, with all the people that you've been seeing and dealing with throughout this whole thing, I would imagine the change from the 80s until now has just been kind of mind-blowing.
I did not expect it. I had no idea about this. I feel like I was a sheep led to the slaughter. No idea. I was basically, by the time the last week I was dabbing up to 1,000 grams, so I can't imagine 1,000 milligrams. I can't imagine using 2,000.
And so,
because that almost ended my life. And if I had died and they drug tested me, if I killed myself like I was planning, they would have only found marijuana in my body with toxicology. So I understand the despair that people have. It just really throws off a lot of things. And it's so destructive. I don't understand why our country has this. In Amsterdam, if it's over 15% THC, it's considered a hard drug. So why is our country, we must just have a drug problem if you're going to allow up to, 99.9% THC to be sold.
I have a question. If say I wanted to go out and grow my own, could I grow marijuana with 98% THC? That's more of a lab thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You cannot grow that level. Again, the potencies, and actually I've grown a lot of crops of marijuana in my life. And again, they were probably around 10%. Now the seeds are getting stronger and stronger again because the idea is to increase the THC, decrease the mitigating cannabidiol, which brings down the psychoactive effect. But it's not natural. It's like the Delta 8.
Right,
that is
right.
Not a natural product
so,
in the plant. And here, it's everywhere.
So their argument about Big Pharma really kind of gets thrown out the window when...
They are Big Pharma.
They are. I mean, the product they're selling comes from a lab just like pharmaceuticals. I think that kind of shoots that argument down.
Hey, Ann. We've talked about dabbing, and I
yeah,
every time we say that, I my little sensor goes off in my head because there are people out there. I don't even know what they're talking about.
I think of Brill Cream. But
what is that even?
Probably different.
Because honestly, this smokescreen movie. If you really want to know what all this stuff is, watch this smokescreen deal. I mean, I think about all the drinking I did in my 20s.
Yeah,
all this crazy stuff I did. I never went to a party where everyone had a blowtorch, though. Like, that just bends my mind.
Reach in your pocket.
Holy crap, these people have, like, they're all like welders.
Well, that's what they were talking about in the film was culture. The culture of this stuff is...
Everybody has their own blowtorch, and they're super pretty. They have, like, blowtorch stores, I guess, or something. But what is all this dabbing and stuff? It just looks like, it actually looks like glue. Sort of.
Yeah, it's actually a concentrate, again, made by stripping the plant of the vegetative material so you have only the crystals left. And it's true. I remember the first time I bought the shatter, I bought shatter. There's actually shatter and wax. Shatter is actually a higher potency. It's clear in color. It looks like almost like a translucent peanut brittle. That's what this looks like. And wax is, again, a lesser refined, high potency concentrate. They're both very high potency. And I bought a dab rig from the dispensary for like $200. It's kind of expensive.
Is that
and
the whole glass thing and the blowtorch and the thing?
Yep. And then I went over a young person's house because I had no idea how to consume it. None. And what I find crazy is that you're supposed to have a certain temperature. It's already a neurotoxin itself, right? The shatter. But when you, in fact, for the concentrate, when you're consuming it at a higher temperature, it turns into benzene. It turns into, again, a cancer-causing element. Hmm. And I had no idea how to do it. So you take a tiny amount, like the size of a grain of rice, and you stick it on a bong. It's basically, if you know what a bong is, with a titanium nail on it. So it's like, instead of having a big bowl to like load the bowl up with the flour, you have a little bowl, and then you have this little tiny applicator. It's made of usually of titanium or something like that, and you touch it. You heat it up with the blowtorch, and then you put it so that it vaporizes. You get a huge hit. Again, it was stupefying when I did that hit. And I should have known. Wow. Like, I should have known.
This is probably a bad idea.
But I didn't. I was, like, taken up with it. I really, really liked it. Because they even say this. I was trying to sell it to some of my customers, and they said, no, thanks. Once you start consuming that, you can't get high from the flower. And that's the problem. You can't get higher from the lower potency.
Yeah, you don't get the rush. So you got to go back.
So that's where they go. They move over into fentanyl.
Well, I just know that I would have hippies come in who've been smoking for 50 years, and they would dab, and it's like you're stoned for the first time ever. I know you're not really Aaron, someone who really got stoned, but we look back and think that was pretty much a time when you really felt the effects of it. I mean, maybe we're chasing the dragon here because you can't feel that same effect, but you can if you consume the concentrates, and especially if you dab it. My problem is that vape pens can also contain the high THC concentrate, and those are very stealth-like.
Oh, yeah. They made that really clear in the video. They show these vape pens, and they just look, yeah, they look like thumb drives. And
so are those also items you buy at these collectives? You buy the pens and the little cartridges, and is that where they go for that?
Yes, and what they're just doing it the worst way possible. You know, they're using cheap Chinese hardware that leaches lead into the cartridges. And they know this is a problem. In Boston, back in 2019, they had people who, again, who bought their vapes from the dispensary who had EVALI, the lung injury. And then we had a huge, so Governor Baker, he put a hold on selling the vape cartridges because he wanted to figure out what was going on with this. This was right during COVID-19. And then there were 619,000 aging marijuana vapes. And people were calling for them to be, really, you need to test these products, but they didn't. The marijuana industry is very, as you know, like you have a sheriff who's potentially going to be, you know, who's getting money, but what about these other, all these other people that are in our politics and in the regulations and the regulatory agencies that are getting money from them?
So they were getting lead poisoning from the vape cartridges?
Absolutely. Yes, they were. They were getting lead poisoning.
Yeah, that'll mess you up in a hurry.
Well, and in the video, it shows them with these, like, gas masks. So they let all this vapor stuff into these, like, what's he call them here? Gas masks and vape hoods. I'm like...
So you get nothing but that. You don't get any air at all. You
John
just get
Boehner
the product.
Yeah, this is, it's so extreme. I mean, I know our society, we kind of go extreme, and we have energy drinks, and it's go, go, go. But do we really have to do this with marijuana? And what about the young people? They're getting such a terrible message.
Yes.
And so many young people are vaping that marijuana. A lot of them are. They don't think it's harmful.
Well, and you can't, I mean, if you're a parent, I mean, good grief, I'm 60 years old. Do you think I would have heard about some of this stuff? But I'm watching this video the other day, and I thought, okay, somehow this all missed me. And I deal with this a lot, this industry a lot. It's not, I deal more on the, like, the cartel side, the crime side, and the environmental stuff side. But I had no idea. I had no idea that going to a party involved a blowtorch these days. What the heck?
And a glass rig. There are people who even, there's a whole market for everything. You have people who create these glass sculptures.
Oh, yeah, they showed that whole thing.
There can be like hundreds of, up to $1,000, and there's a whole lifestyle. People, again, I see so many people. This is what, it's so strong, and I feel bad because I explained to my family what happened to me, consuming the concentrates, how I, again, I didn't talk much about the cannabis-induced psychosis, but that is when you are not in reality.
Right.
And when you're in cannabis-induced psychosis, you don't know that. You think what you're perceiving is real.
Wow.
And my
let's talk more about that when we come back. Hang on to that thought, because the psychosis part of it is something that I think most people are going to say, oh, well, that's not going to happen to me or my kid or whatever, and that never happened to us in the 60s, and I could just hear the really loud denial in the back of my head.
I hear it all the time.
I know, and you hear people say that, and it's like, okay, if you hear nothing else, this is stuff you better get smart about, because it's coming like a freight train for our society. Our guest is Anne Hassel, and we will be back with you in just a couple minutes. You're listening to We the People. You can find everything about the program and all the references we're giving you at wethepeopleradio.us.
Wow! You're bigger. I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got you. Oh, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar.
This old man and me were at the bar, and we were having us some beers and swapping night on cares, talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace, all the hell we raised. crazy.
It's one of those songs you can't overplay. It seems to fit with a lot of things right now.
Yeah.
A lot of things.
Especially the crazy part.
Oh, man. So, okay, Ann, I kind of cut you off at the beginning, but I wanted you to tell the whole thing about your experience with that, because I think it's important to know that this does happen.
Right. Well, when I was dabbing again, I would pass out and be in this like dreamlike state, and I would just, again, like, I don't know where these violent thoughts came from. I'm a nonviolent person by nature. I was doing yoga every day before I went into the dispensary, and you get to the point where you're seeing things that aren't there, you're thinking things that aren't real. But what happened was, when I woke up to the contamination. That's what really woke me up, was, again, with the mold and that type of contamination. So I quit using. And I was so disturbed, because I had written emails to many public officials and the Department of Public Health about, again, the contamination. Of course, I received no response. But I was just so terrified. I became, and this is what I heard, is a dangerous time after you stop consuming this high-potency THC. Then I just went really off the deep end, Aaron. And that was when I thought this grow was so bad, there was no other reason besides it being an Illuminati conspiracy. And it had a lot of, I'd say, occultism and almost like religious tones to it. And I was just terrified. At one point, well, I stopped communicating with my friends for 2 weeks. I actually was incapacitated. I was at their house, and I could not even really communicate. When I finally was able to go outside, I was armed with 4 knives. And that's not normal, Aaron. I thought, I have to have a knife.
No.
Yeah, in each pocket, I had a pendant knife, and I had a knife in my boot. But my friends thought that once I came outside and was, like, pretending to, like, unsheath them, oh, she's a little better. And that shows you how far gone I was. I thought that everything, I thought I was on video, I thought people were spying on me, I thought they were going to come kill me, I thought these superhuman shape-shifting reptilians were going to come kill me. And I know that sounds crazy, I never would have believed that would have happened to me, but I was absolutely terrified. And I know when you listen to someone like the story of Johnny Stack, who again was consuming the high-potency THC, 19-year-old jumped off a 6-story parking garage in Colorado. Laura Stack is doing a lot of speaking. And I know that terrible state of mind. When you have Andy Zorn left a letter to his mother, he was only on medical marijuana, high THC, and he wrote, "Marijuana killed my soul plus ruined my brain." And he took his life. So I think I was, again, seeing things that weren't there. I was seeing a lot of meaning. It was bizarre. And people could see what was happening to me. They didn't know quite what to do. But I think it's a miracle that I was able to pull out of this.
Yeah.
I thought my brain was permanently harmed, Aaron. I really thought.
Yeah, and you can really string some words together, too. You don't even, I mean, you would think after that much scrambling, you'd have a hard time really tracking. The good news is, I guess, if you play your cards right and you don't kill yourself or someone else or leap off a building or become hopelessly lost inside your vaping gas mask, you can get your life back.
You do, and I think that part of it is, why do we go that way? I think there is, like, I actually turned back to my religion, and I feel like here we are on the planet. We're all so unhappy. We have a hole in our hearts that really, I think, only God can fill, but we fill it with other substances. There's so many things people can turn to that they think is, you know, entertaining or giving them pleasure, but it's all, like, devoid of, I think, true satisfaction, and it's also destructive. Yeah. Especially, again,
it's interesting.
THC.
They say that a lot about this really high THC, and same too with the psychedelics and all that. That it's a quest to find a kind of higher meaning and to find God, and it's like.
I did that, Aaron, because
yeah.
I actually was someone new age. I did psychedelics. I thought it was increasing my spirituality. I thought marijuana did the same thing. I was really into reggae music, Rastafarianism, where marijuana is a sacrament. And I thought that was really what it was. I saw religion as really being oppressive, I thought at the time, and I was trying to find my own connection. But I think I was trying to find a connection my whole life, looking back.
Yeah, and you kind of caught up on something out of this, out of the book, "The Dangerous Truth About Today's Marijuana." I've got an assistant here, Deputy Joe here. He's got an entire bag of resources, and he keeps handing me things. But I think this part was really, this is what you were saying: the risk of developing cannabis use disorder increases to 33% among young people who have engaged in regular, weekly, or daily use of cannabis. Wow. Means one in three who start using marijuana while they're young will experience one of six disorders. Here are the six. Parents out there, grandparents out there, that, you know, it's harmless. It's a harmless, just a plant. You know, it's no big deal. Well, I'm kind of curious which one of the six you think is harmless. Affective disorders of thought and feeling, including bipolar disorder, anxiety disorders, and depression. That's one. Schizophrenia, also amazing. Amotivational syndrome. I think we've all seen that. Disruptive cognitive function. Those are the people probably dancing around on the curb that you're always afraid are going to fall in front of your car. Neuropsychological decline and psychotic disorders. And that would have been, I think, when you're running around with a bunch of knives, that's probably psychotic disorders. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I have stayed in a Holiday Inn Express.
Well, that kind of an eye opener is you talk about your experience. You're one person, and in the film they talked about, I think it was in the 80s, they pulled and found that 900,000 people nationwide were using marijuana on a regular basis, and today that number's gone to 9 million. So, you know, you look at your experience and then...
Do the math.
How many people are out there that, you know, are having these same...
Well, you know, it's funny you should ask, problems. But I was just handed a small note. 30 million Americans will use recreationally, about 10% will use 24/7. 30 million are using recreationally.
Yeah.
God, they're all driving.
Yeah.
We haven't even
right,
gotten
they're
to,
driving and using it.
Yeah, I we didn't even get to that part.
Yeah, it's dangerous because I know everyone would drive at the dispensary basically high, and we thought we improved our driving. We all, that's what they say, and it's really sad. I'm very fortunate that I never harmed anyone, though I did in fact do a 720 on the highway, which was not good, but I did not harm myself or anyone else.
And let me back you up on your statistics. I do all the DUI testing here in Shasta County. We arrest about 100 DUIs per month. And 10 years ago, only about 10% of the people that were arrested said they used cannabis and alcohol as a part of their DUI. Just prior to COVID, when we had to stop, it had gone up to 50%. So 50% of the drivers now self-report that they use cannabis and alcohol as a part of their DUI.
Jeez. Mm.
That's
a scary thing, because when you do both, that's when I almost had my accident. When you do both, it increases the effects of each of them.
Yeah. Yeah, they interviewed a couple of guys in the film, and they attested to the fact that it makes them so much more aware, so much more careful. You know, their senses were much greater than when they weren't high. But yet the statistics show just the opposite, that there's way more accidents and fatalities now involving marijuana than ever before. So I'm not so sure you can say that it makes you a better driver.
But they say that the one guy was in the video, he's like, oh, yeah, drinking messes up your perspective. But we all know marijuana really heightens your awareness. And I was like,
no.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he did say it makes you slow down and really analyze. Yeah, I imagine.
Except for the people that drive super fast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. There's just so much misinformation out there and bad information.
Do people try to tell you that your experience wasn't
typical,
accurate, or Do people kind of fight with you about it?
Well, a lot of people I don't really hang out with anymore. Once I stopped using marijuana, a lot of my friends are by the wayside. I was really major buzzkill for a lot of them when I would try and tell them what had happened. And, no, actually, I have to say, people I know who still use marijuana told me that they saw me in a bad state, and they know how it affected me. They know it was terrible, yet they still go get their marijuana edibles at the store.
Have you noticed a difference in them?
They did not go into the, they did not have a negative, they didn't dab as much as I did, but I still think they should stop too, but they want to keep consuming it. They think it's natural, they think it helps them sleep.
Hmm.
They only see the positives of it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that goes back to that cultural thing, you know, they talk about the culture of marijuana, and it's a group of people that are quite a bit different than, I think, mainstream. When you stand back and look at the users, it's a different crowd. It's a different crowd.
I was a part of that. This is so interesting. I feel like I was a part of the counterculture when I was went to jail for using marijuana, growing marijuana. And then here I am, like, ready to ride the green rush. And then I'm like, I'm against this. And then I became, I think, counterculture. Now we're counterculture. I really feel like we are. But I think people need to stand up for the truth and for human health. And it's appalling that we have, again, the leaders and the regulatory agencies doing nothing. In my state, we have all these marijuana billboards that are not supposed to be up. And one says life is better with cannabis. Well, I have a problem with that. These kids are, like, riding by that. They think it's good. And I feel like parents are too stressed these days to understand what a threat this is. This is a big threat to their child's brain.
Yeah, when you put this in a store, I mean, I had this conversation with a member of our city council. I'm like, what are you going to legalize next? Brothels? You know, let's just make it all legal. Why not?
Well, you're right, though. If you put it in a store,
it must be
okay.
Kids,
or they wouldn't put it in a store.
If you're a kid, that says that's normal.
Yeah.
I don't care if your parents don't do it. There's a lot of peer pressure. There's a huge amount of misinformation. And then you look at all the marketing that goes towards kids with all this flavored vaping. Tell me this. Can you tell the... okay, if you're the person vaping it, you can tell. But if you're just a regular person and you smell this vaping stuff that has like a... I don't know. It smells like cotton candy or whatever. It smells like some sort of food thing or something like that. Can you tell if it's really a THC product?
I can't find that you can't. I just know that back in the 80s, you had to be in the woods. You could not be vaping. Kids are now vaping in the classroom, Aaron. They're sitting there vaping. And it just admits I like to know why, if we're not allowing flavored tobacco products, why on earth do we have flavored marijuana vapes? Like Skittles flavored. Who's that appealing to, and why do we have that?
Yeah, I think that's where the legislation just hasn't caught up with the industry yet, because of the money.
But it's almost too late. I mean, we've got all this stuff out here. We've normalized it. You know, once you normalize things, unnormalizing it, there is no real way to do that. We've got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Ann Hassel. Ann, think about all the stuff that obviously we don't know, which is pretty vast, that you'd like to tell us when we come back. How about that? That will be your job. We're going to come back here listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. You sound a little tortured there, Bill.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep dabbing, you'll close your
eyes. Yeah, exactly.
We're good. Yeah.
Hey, just out of curiosity, when you would pass out from this stuff, did you remember?
I do. I had two like stoner friends who are a little older than me. These are women who were in their late 50s, and I would come over and dab, and I remember I would get sleepy, but they told me I would pass out, and I believe I did, because I would just get to the point where I just, my brain just snapped, and I'd pass out. And I'd come too. And they said later, we thought about filming you and showing you that. Well, maybe that would have helped. I'm not sure. Maybe not. But if that type of, they knew it wasn't healthy. They were trying to do what they could, but I wasn't listening. Because that's how it is with addiction. You don't see the harm. Hmm. Especially when it's a legalized harm.
Let me ask you this. Your stoner friends, were they like, professional type people, or were they your typical stoner type people that, you know, lived in their mom's basement?
No, they were on their own. One had a successful business and owned real estate.
Wow.
And that's the thing. I think some people like to say, well, you have to use marijuana in order to be successful, but I think people really succeed despite being on marijuana.
Right, right. Or succeed and then dabble in it. I don't know. Can you dabble in it? I think once you start down that road, it's...
Yeah, getting out is probably pretty hard.
Yeah.
They don't want to. I've talked to my friend because, again, the other day I'm with her. We're going to go get Chinese food. She's like, oh, I got some gummies. I love their stores everywhere. And she knows how I feel about it. And I said, Lisa, you know, how are we going to support this? Because we have 13 marijuana stores in a relatively small town. And she's like, well, they're just going to have to, it's going to be $1 billion industry. And she's excited by that, despite knowing what happened to me and the harm that happened.
Yeah.
And I just can't even talk to her about the issue anymore. I just make sure I'm not around her when she's using marijuana because I've decided I'm uncomfortable with that.
Right, right. Well, it's like an alcoholic, you know. You don't go hang out at bars. You know, it makes it kind of tough.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, bring over a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
So what are some things that, you know, like parents or friends or whatever, what should they be looking for that maybe are not things that are really super obvious?
Well, you know, there are different videos that you can get that are on YouTube, but I would say if you have any type of changes in your child's behavior, and again, if you see the blowtorch in their room, that's definitely a giveaway. Otherwise, you know, the thing is, they can do the edibles. They can do the stealth-like vaping. And it's so hard, I think, for parents to see it. But I just know that still ask them questions. They definitely are going to seem a little different. They are, mentally.
Mm-hmm.
When you look into their eyes, I mean, where are they? I mean, you have people... Again, I feel so bad for a woman. She's in this whole effort, and her son was doing so well until he started to work in the food industry. And, of course, I've worked in the food industry before. There's a great culture of drug consumption, especially when you're cooking, right? Because that's just how it goes. And he started using. She did notice the odd behavior, and he consumed. They were trying to reach him with all their effort, and he jumped off an overpass and killed himself.
Oh.
It's so traumatic for these people, and I feel so badly. I feel like I survived for a reason. I feel like I was on the brink of psychosis and suicide, you know, not coming back from the psychotic break. And it's so hard because people, again, who are using marijuana, I guess if they really defend it, you got to ask yourself why. Why are they so defensive of this?
Yeah. And the people that are super defensive of it are not just the people who are making money. They're
the users. Definitely.
They're users.
The users are definitely defensive of it.
God. Oh, yeah, here we go. Here's a nice list. Things that could happen to your children if they use marijuana. Chronic bronchitis symptoms. Gosh, I can tell you as a lifelong asthmatic, that's going to be great. Cannabinoid hypermesis syndrome.
Repeated vomiting. All you do is vomit. Vomit,
that's
vomit, vomit.
Scromiting. The screaming and vomiting, Dr. Renette Lev coined the term scromiting. And actually, I had a friend who that happened.
Wow.
At my dispensary, they went to my dispensary, and they thought they bought a 10-milligram edible for a girls' night out. These three women, and they had consumed them before. But when I went to the cultivation center and the edible factory, I noticed that they could easily mess up because the workers were high. And she consumed,
wow, that's shocking.
Yeah. She consumed an edible that she had consumed before, but this time she went into seizures. She had to call the EMTs. She was taken away, and she screamed and projectile vomited for 8 hours and had an IV in her arm. And this woman was in her almost 50, because that's what happens. You're getting people who, again, it's not just the youth doing it. And I know in my work as a physical therapist, I'm seeing a lot of people in their 60s that are turning to marijuana, but it interferes with their blood thinner, and no one seems to be saying, letting them know this.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if you doubt the cancer thing, I mean, I hope people go listen to Stuart Reese. I mean, there's a ton of data on the carcinogens in this, and the biggest increase was children, 49% increase in kids, and the highest concentration was under the age of 5. I thought, wow, what a great thing to do for your kids.
Yeah, expose them to something they have no control over.
Yeah, pregnancy complications, marijuana toxicity, brain damage, bipolar disorder, permanent loss of 6 to 8 IQ points. I'm thinking that's low, like no pun intended, but I'm thinking 6 to 8 probably doesn't go far enough. Anxiety, panic attacks, depression, paranoia, psychosis, increased risk of schizophrenia and suicidal thoughts and behavior. I think actually you hit all of those today. You talked about almost every single one of those.
I know someone who I was at a job with, and she was younger, and she was consuming a strong marijuana strain for a lot of her college life, and she was consuming one called AK-47. You know, how's that for a marijuana strain?
That's a super
very
great
strong
name.
She
straight
eventually
from the
got
cartel.
Very paranoid, and she actually went into schizophrenia and had to go to the mental hospital, and now she's in her 30s, and she's on disability, and she's still going to the marijuana store.
Wow.
It just, like, takes your breath away. You look at that and you think, okay, our society, well, and then I learned something, I forget who I was talking to, but I was speaking with, he was a chemist, and he said he has a friend who's a neuroscience guy and practicing medicine, and said we have, like, warehouses full of people who've been brought back from the brink by, you know, what's the thing? What's the... They hit them with Narcan. Hitting them with Narcan, but they're already brain dead. So we're just going to warehouse their body forever because they were brought back, but they're never going to be functional again. You start looking at the cost to society and how this plays out. And in the video that you were part of, Ann, the pictures of the cities where you have these, I mean, zombies actually look a lot more aware. At least they dress themselves in the movies anyway. How long ago was that documentary?
This came out, I believe, was it 2020?
Smokescreen?
Yes. And
wow.
It's so sad when I see what's happening with the cities. And I have to say, our little liberal town, Northampton, with all these 13 marijuana stores, well, they're psychotic people. I don't even like to go to town anymore. You have psychotic people, schizophrenic people. Is that okay to have them running around, you know, getting in people's way or demanding money? And I think they think this is acceptable.
Is there any sort of, you know, like if you're a bartender, you have requirements. You know, if you serve people that are over the, obviously you're not doing breathalyzer tests in the bar, but if you can tell someone's seriously impaired and you continue to serve them and they get into an accident or kill somebody or something, there are repercussions for that. Are there any kind of, I don't know, guardrails on the folks that work at pot stores?
We were always told to sell people whatever they wanted.
Okay. It's good to know there's no guardrails.
When the cannabis cafes open, how are you going to have open public consumption?
It's a what?
You know
Wait,
that
say that again?
Impairs you.
It's a...
We're going to have the cannabis cafes open. I think you could have them in California where you can go and consume, like an edible.
You just go sit around together with your blowtorches
you
and your
cannabis cafe
gummy bears?
And they're saying, well, you have to do that because some people are homeless, so we got to let them have a place where they can medicate.
Yeah,
safely.
See, that got right by me. I didn't see that one.
Well, you look at the state of some of these big cities, Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, where they've pretty much put the green light on drug use.
Literally the green light.
Yeah, and they're just totally falling into decay. I mean, you can't walk down. It's not safe. Shoot, last night we went to the grocery store. I told Aaron.
I
think we screwed up and went on prison night or something because it was very strange. First time, didn't feel safe in the grocery store. You walk outside with a load of groceries and it's like, all right, you do the buddy system, you know. Zigzag, serpentine to your car, throw it in and go.
Yeah, this guy was such a genius. Let's see, I took a picture of him, which was always risky, you know.
Yeah,
I'm taking a picture of him behind Bill. Bill steps aside. I'm like, really? Completely not helping me here. Yeah, but he had on the side of his forehead this big spider, which was sort of inartfully done. Then he had this strange giant bump on his face. I don't even know what was going on there. But then on the side of his head, it said, "Bullies suck." But it was, you know, maybe it's just, you know, back to the days of teaching. But B-U-L-L-Y apostrophe S.
That's so bad.
S-U-K. And I'm like, God bless America. What
yeah,
the
put that
hell?
Permanently on
You're
going to
put
face.
That permanently on your face and not even check the spelling. I guess that's sort of an afterthought. But yeah, he was a terrifying looking man. And the thing that was weird is I always make a mental note like, okay, we're headed to the parking lot. I'm watching for the guy with the apostrophe in the parking lot. Well, it just so happens in this giant parking lot, who's right next to us but the wife-girlfriend person putting the groceries in the car, and I'm thinking, really, of all the gin joints, you know, she parked right next to us? What the heck? And where was he?
Yeah, he disappeared.
Nowhere.
I think when
he's out there somewhere in the dark, I'm like, oh, I feel so much better.
Yeah. Maybe that's
camouflage. Leave the groceries. It's only $150.
Yeah.
We'll just come back tomorrow.
It's strange. And it's happening. And the only reason I mentioned that is it's not just big cities where this is happening. It's affecting all the
Yeah, we have 90,000 people in our town.
Yeah. It's really becoming a serious, serious issue. You don't go anywhere hardly anymore where, what you said earlier, you smell marijuana. Either the plant. Or the smoke. I mean, it's everywhere you go. So it's I'm just really glad that you were able to come on and give us your perspective
from the inside.
Yeah,
because this is what you have to look forward to if you think this is going to work out.
Yeah, because there's still a lot of towns out there that want to approve these co-ops and allow people to just go downtown and buy their smoke, and it's all natural, and it's going to be a disaster in your community, guaranteed. And we see it everywhere.
You know, you're in California, so, yeah, it started really in 96 there, right? In California.
Yeah, and they all think they're going to get all this tax money.
Yep, and now California, if I read correctly, Aaron, they're considering getting rid of the cannabis tax now.
Well,
so there goes that argument.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, we deal with a lot of, just a lot of the misnomers with the, oh, you know, we tax it and we'll be able to regulate it and that'll make it safer for everybody. Well, all that's done in our area has brought the cartels out in force to do a bunch of illegal grows, which is what'll happen everywhere else. But the state...
Happened in my state.
Yeah, and the state tells people, well, you know what, if you don't have legalized commercial growing, then we're probably not going to be able to help you enforce that. And the bad part is they do it, and they still don't help them. Let's see. Tax revenues from pot sales do not cover increased crime, health care, or addiction services. Revenues are projected to be less than 0.003% of the total California state tax revenue. So...
That's going to make a huge impact. And I love it when they say, well, it's going to help our schools. It's, you know, this tax
money.
Just like
the lottery. That was amazing.
It's going to help all these social programs. It never does. There hasn't been one community that can stand up and say, this has been a blessing. We've generated all this money to help, and there's not one community that can stand up and say that. So
no.
I don't know what they're going for.
Well, Ann, you are our hero. Thank you
for
coming on with us. And we realize you had other things to do on Sunday afternoon, probably, and Mother's Day. Oh yeah, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. And because moms are great, unless you're a pot smoker, in which case you're a bad mom. You should reevaluate your priorities. Or your kids will come on the show later and talk about you. How about that? Your story is incredible, and I hope people will go on and look at the video that you produced and that you were produced in and get smart about all this. It's about time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks a million. I'm sure we'll talk soon, and that's it for us today. You are listening to We the People. You can find all of this at wethepeopleradio.us.
And justice is the one thing you should always find. You got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.